Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hello, everybody. This is Colonel Allen West, the old school patriot and the author of the book Hold Texas, Hold the Nation, Victory or Death. We're looking at an Alamo moment in the United States of America. And if you want to take your stand on freedom ramparts, then you need to listen to Real Talk with Audrey Russo. And as Colonel William Barrett Travis said, on that incredible day, February the 24th, 1836, is victory or death. And we can have victory if we listen to Audrey.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Has the leadership of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point betrayed its noble history, spoken of by General MacArthur, of duty, honor, and country? Well, we're going to discuss this and more with my next guests. For my new listeners, Major General Paul Vallely is a West Point graduate, a retired deputy commanding general for the U.S. Army, a veteran of two combat tours in Vietnam, and a graduate of the Industrial College of the Armed Forces and the Army War College. Throughout his 32-year military career, Major General Vallely served in positions such as infantry company commander, intelligence officer, operations officer, and military advisor. His theaters of operation included Europe and the Pacific Rim countries. He has over 15 years' experience in special operations, psychological, and civil military operations. General Vallely has served as a military analyst for the Fox News Channel and is a guest on numerous nationally syndicated radio and TV talk shows. He's a best-selling author and the founder of Stand Up America. Paul is joined by two distinguished former flag officers and former graduates of West Point. Colonel retired Bill Prince received his commission in the infantry from West Point, class of 1970. He served in Vietnam with both Ranger and Special Forces units. He then took a position with the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, subsequently receiving one of the CIA's highest awards for valor, for extraordinary heroism in the face of hostile armed opposition. He holds a master's degree from Harvard University with a focus on international relations. James Atticus Bowden graduated from the United States Military Academy in 1972. He served for 20 years as an airborne ranger infantry officer in five divisions. His last field duty was executive officer, 2nd Brigade, 3AD, in the Gap. He led the last Army 21 study at the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command. Included in his curriculum vitae, he earned master's degrees from Harvard University and Columbia University and taught as an assistant professor in the Department of Social Sciences at USMA and adjunct faculty at the College of William and Mary. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome to Major General Paul Vallely, Colonel Bill Prince, and Lieutenant Colonel James Bowden. Well, welcome, gentlemen. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Audrey.
Thank you, Audrey. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Paul, I'm going to begin with you here. Would you start us off?
Well, I sure would. And I'd like to really introduce Bill Prince a little further, who's the president of our new MacArthur Society that West Point graduates have formed within the last year. And Jim Bowden, who's a tremendous an analyst on military affairs, great background. He's going to talk a little bit about the Borman Commission, which we're working towards getting it congressionally sponsored. But let me just take us back a few decades. When we started tracking what was happening at West Point back in the late 80s, we saw they were recruiting a number of leftist type of professors from the Ivy League schools and replacing the uniformed instructors that we always had had at West Point. And this made a big difference. And if you look over the last couple of decades, particularly the last one, 9 out of 10 guest speakers at West Point are left wing. And so they've expanded this social insertion of all of these left wing ideologues into the curriculum of West Point. And then you had the introduction of critical race theory, DEI, all of these things which tended to subvert what we call the traditions of West Point. You know, we're building warriors for the future to protect America. And so now we see our honor system that's been challenged. Bill is going to cover the latest situation where they want to take duty on our country out of the dialogue to a degree. But serious things are happening. And when we see diversity and we see an emphasis on athletics and a lesser amount of our officers remaining on service in the Army, this is a serious situation for America. So with that overview, let me pass it to Bill, and he'll talk about the MacArthur Society.
Right. Well, I'm going to begin by with Colonel Bill Prince. Bill, would you kindly share what the MacArthur Society is and the position you hold there?
As General Vallely mentioned, we're a new society. We were only formed in June of 23. And our society has been described by some of our less than flattering acquaintances as a group of cranky old grads. I think that we are a society of very concerned old grads. And as the general mentioned, we have been watching what we consider to be a deterioration over actually decades, really, but it seems to be accelerating now. And so we formed in June of 2023, so we're less than a year old.
Wow.
And the mission is to preserve, defend, and advocate for West Point's history, purpose, and principles of duty, honor, and country. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to take a few minutes towards the end to talk about the efforts on the part of our current superintendent to expunge duty, honor, country from the official mission statement of the military academy. But I'd like to save that and to go through a couple of kind of overview questions if we can.
Right, absolutely. Well, we're living in a time when the powers that be give little to no credence to duty, honor, or country. Why was it important to create the MacArthur Society at such a time as this?
Audrey, I want to caveat this by saying that I recruited for West Point for many, many years. I talked young men and women into going to West Point, talked to parents, encouraged families to to look at West Point favorably as an option, and which is why I'm frankly heartsick over what I think are some serious problems. Just recently, we've had a very serious honor scandal. I live in Florida, and we had 5 or 6 West Point cadets overdose on a mixture of cocaine and fentanyl when they were on spring vacation in Florida. There's been the teaching of critical race theory, which we'll talk about in a minute. And especially, what's especially concerning to me is a lack of transparency, because as I and a number of other grads have tried to get information from West Point on some of the things that we see as troubling, there has been a dramatic lack of transparency. And so all of these things led a bunch of us to say, you know what, we need to form this society, and we need to try to get the word out and encourage other graduates so that we can be a voice in what we hope is to rectify some of these things. Now, I want to make clear that we are not trying to vie with the Association of Graduates. The AOG is a huge operation, which I think raised for the military academy last year $63 million or something like that. We're not trying to replace the West Point Association of Graduates, but what we are trying to do is bring to light some of the issues, and I had an opportunity to talk personally one-on-one with the West Point superintendent, Lieutenant General Steve Gillen, at the Board of Visitors meeting in Washington, D.C. last week. And I said, we as a society, we want to help you. We're not here to run you down. We're trying to help you with some key issues, key concerns. So that's why we felt it was important to create the society, right. And we're growing and very, very busy.
Which is great. And you mentioned CRT. So the society we now live in is more focused on the superficiality of race rather than the content of character and merit. Would you share why the society focuses on merit over racial identity?
I spent some time in Vietnam as a young lieutenant. When I graduated from West Point, it was still pretty easy as an infantry lieutenant to get a job in Vietnam. And I ended about 40 years of service with 11 deployments between Iraq and Afghanistan. I served in Somalia and El Salvador during the war there and a whole bunch of other places. And I've worked for these decades with young and men and women, many of whom were West Point graduates. And it needs to be all about teamwork and merit in combat. And I have a fair amount of time with people shooting at me. You don't care what color a person's skin is. It doesn't even enter. You want somebody who's proficient and professional and knows what to do and can operate in a hostile environment. And so we look upon the importance of merit over anything, yeah. Over gender, over race, over anything. And that's why we're so concerned about to include critical race theory.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more. And there are many that purport that increasing the numbers of blacks and women will increase combat effectiveness, yet they proffer up no empirical evidence to prove such a claim. Why is their supposition wrong?
Audrey, that's a great comment. I attended at West Point last August. The Office of Diversity, Inclusion, and Equal Opportunity the West Point Office of Diversity, Inclusion, and Equal Opportunity hosts a two-day conference up there, which I attended in August. And I mentioned this to the superintendent last week, too, as a matter of fact. They started off with advocating the importance of a diversity of ideas. Great, yes, I think everybody agrees that it's important to have a diversity of ideas. But in that conference, very quickly, I saw them slop over into diversity, meaning the importance of more minorities and more women in leadership positions, in positions of responsibility. And as you mentioned a moment ago, there is no empirical proof to show that increasing minorities or women in combat units increases effectiveness. There's no empirical proof. And I was sort of glad to see West Point has an individual, Colonel at the time, I don't know if he's still there, Colonel Evangelista, who is the data officer at West Point. And someone asked him, wasn't me, I wish it had been, but somebody asked him if there's data to support the importance of DEI. And he had the professional integrity to say, no, we don't have that data. We hope to get it at some point in the future.
They make these claims. I think it's amazing. They make the claims with absolutely no evidence, which is foolish.
It's foolish, and it leads, I think, when we get down to talking about critical race theory, that leads to, in my view, a very, very divisive cancer infecting especially combat units, but any unit in the United States Army. You're dividing, if you adhere to critical race theory, you're dividing basically the world into the oppressors and the oppressed. And if you're oppressed, then you're clearly a victim and you can adopt victimhood. And that is just terrible for unit cohesion and the responsiveness of an individual that buys into, oh, well, I'm a victim, I've been oppressed, and you, my platoon leader or company commander, you're the oppressor. And so I'm really not going to do what you tell me to do because you're an oppressor and I'm a victim. That's just devastating for good order and discipline.
Yeah, yeah. Troop morale and military readiness is basically, excuse the expression, in the toilet because of this. And how can we ever win any war in the future if they continue in this direction?
Audrey, that's what we're trying to do. Right. And actually, Jim and I were talking earlier this morning about what we can do, what we need to do. And I want to make a point. I believe that West Point gets a lot right. As I mentioned, I've served over decades with West Point graduates who were doing very, very well in hostile situations. But this is, I believe, a cancer that if we don't surgically remove this cancer, it will have a devastating impact on the future. We need to be about creating warriors. And I told this to the superintendent too, because he comes from a Ranger background as I do. I said, when I was in the Rangers in Vietnam, we didn't worry about pronouns. I mean, we worried about staying alive and keeping our troops alive and accomplishing the mission. Pronouns, really? Well, he didn't like that comment.
But it's true. You know, as you said, there's a lot of good at West Point. But as the Bible says, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. So as you said, with a cancer, it's eventually going to reach out and touch every area. So the good is going to disappear eventually. Now, the failure of leadership at West Point is astounding. The leadership. You're calling upon the Academy's leadership to end the teaching, training, and favorable discussion of so-called, as we said, diversity, inclusion, equity initiatives. Would you expound on that for us?
Yes. I live in Florida. Our governor, Ron DeSantis, you may be aware, fired all the DEI offices and all the colleges and universities in the entire state.
Great.
At a savings of, I think, $5 million. The superintendent, I saw that he had requested for the DEI initiatives at West Point, I think it was $640,000. I would like to think that you could use that money in a much better way. But the a big problem there, what I found, is a lack of transparency.
Yeah.
And Audrey, this came about when there were charges that West Point was teaching critical race theory. And West Point essentially tried to deny that. And I told this to the superintendent as well. I said, you know how embarrassing it is that it takes a lawsuit to force West Point to tell the truth about the teaching of critical race theory?
Wow.
I said, you know how humiliating that is for us in the field? And that's a quote from what I told him. There has been a serious lack of transparency. When I started to dig into this, reluctantly, I have to admit, because as I said, I recruited for West Point.
Right.
When I started to dig into the teaching of critical race theory, it ended up being a three-part series investigation that I did. It took me 7 months. And I got virtually no help from West Point. Most of the time, I got stonewalled or bounced from one office to another. Oh, well, you need to talk to so-and-so. I go try to talk to so-and-so. Oh, well, that's not really my responsibility. You need to talk to somebody else. And that worried me. That bothered me. And I would have been more satisfied had they said to me, okay, cranky old grad, retired colonel, here's what we're doing. Here's why we're doing it. Here's why we think it's important. And if you don't like it, you can go pound sand. Okay, I'm a big boy. I've been shot at. I could take that. But it bothered me that they would stonewall me on it. Now, and I have a Freedom of Information Act request that I submitted now over 2 years ago. Now, by federal law, an organization has 20 business days to respond, at least with an interim response.
Right.
To a Freedom of Information Act request. This is a fairly simple, straightforward FOIA request that I put in over 2 years ago. I'm still waiting. I think they hope that at my age that I'll die before they have to respond to this thing. This is just for an organization to feel so comfortable with violating federal law. And basically, I think they're trying to hide what they were doing. My Freedom of Information Act request was really fairly simple, and I keep getting, well, we're working on it, we're working on it, we're having to do a lot of redaction.
Why?
Redaction? Why? I mean, it was a straightforward request on who invited a specific speaker to address cadets, faculty, and staff at West Point. I had the date, the name. Well, who invited this lady? That's all I'm asking.
Yeah.
2 years I've been waiting.
2 years? Oh, my gosh.
Over 2 years.
Oh, my gosh.
But, Audrey, we have to remember this emanates right from the White House to the Department of Defense, Department of Army, on down.
I knew it.
This just didn't start at West Point. This is driven by a left-wing ideology to destroy and dismantle our country, our Constitution, and West Point. That's why Jim's efforts now are so important, what we do in the future. But Bill's been right on target on all of this.
Yes, yes. West Point's leadership has displayed, of course, a lack of integrity. I'm talking about the leadership, okay? I'm not talking about the cadets. But, of course, that gets handed, it gets shared like a cancer. The society is demanding transparency, as you said. They're delaying it, and it, as you said, it was a basic request. You have the information. Give the information. So it's clear what Paul just said is true. They've been told to hide this. They're doing something that was wrong here for the academy. Am I correct?
I'm afraid so. when I was doing my investigation on the teaching of critical race theory at West Point, I contacted the West Point Public Affairs office there, and I said, I'm working on this, and I am willing to submit this to you in draft prior to publication, because I hope you will counter what I'm saying, you'll provide context, additional information, and I will hold this and not publish it, because I'm eager to have your response to this. Nothing. So I continued the investigation, and I reached out to them a second time. I said, hey, I've got this basically finished. I want to send it to you in draft before publication, and I promise you, whatever you respond to, corrections, comments, disagreements, that I will incorporate those into the investigation. Silence.
Wow.
Stonewall. Man, it was to the PAO office that several offices at West Point directed me to when they didn't want to answer my questions or my request for help. So that bothers me.
Yes.
Again, as I said, Audrey, I've been shot at. I'm a big boy. I can take rejection. I can take people saying you're wrong.
Right.
But for them to essentially block bringing things to light. And what I'm feeling now, and this is a personal opinion, that there are some elements up there that really don't like the spotlight. They don't like the light shined on what they're doing. And so they will go to great lengths to block people investigating and people like the three of us here digging into what they're doing.
Audrey, let me add a data point. In 2021,
yes,
you could dig through online, there's a thing called the Green Book, and you could dig through the courses of instruction and hour by hour see what the reading material was, the reading assignment. You could see what TED Talks the cadets were asked to look at, and you could see the instructional material, as I said, hour by hour. I did that after my class president was told that they weren't teaching CRT, did a quick run through the Green Book, found plenty of examples where it was absolutely false.
Right.
And then, but now you can't do that. You can see the list of courses, but you cannot dig down into the courses to see what instructional material they're using.
Unbelievable. Bill, have you found that the Academy uses different standards for athletes in admissions, training, and service upon graduation?
It certainly seems so, and the data seems to back that up. And this is an area that I have mixed feelings. We know, West Point, we used to say that a successful season, football season, is when we beat Navy. We can lose every game, but if we beat Navy, that's a successful football season. And I don't.
Yeah, I'm laughing because my husband's a former Navy CB, so
okay.
I think he defers.
And I don't remember off the top of my head. I think we lost to Navy like 14 years in a row or something like that. It was pretty traumatic. And it seems to me, based on what I've seen, that West Point has to make a decision. Do we want to admit candidates based on merit, solely on merit, or do we want to have a winning football team? Those two don't necessarily go together.
Right.
And it seems to me that West Point has decided that it's important to have a winning football team, and so we're going to let in young men who probably are not well qualified to be cadets. And so I'm troubled by that. We should not be focused on winning football teams more than we should be focused on getting candidates, the best possible candidates we can, to fight and win our wars.
Yes.
So I am somewhat troubled. I do appreciate, and I got a lot of classmates that are big Army football fans. That's great. But I think we're paying a heavy price for that.
Yeah, a very heavy price to win a game. That's not worth it. Jim, I'm going to come to you. West Point's honor code, as I said, has for generations been a cadet does not lie, cheat, or steal, and does not tolerate those who do. Has that changed since the class of 1977's cheating scandal?
Yes, the code has not changed. The system has changed. Mm-hmm. The system by which you enforce the code has changed. And along those lines of honor and cheating, for full disclosure, I'm not a retired lieutenant colonel. I did go to two of those most liberal graduate schools in the country. But I did a terrible thing when I was there. I went to the library and I read the books. So
yes.
I really did a terrible thing. But no, the system has changed. And there is it used to be that when a cadet was found violating the honor code, it was an automatic expulsion. There are a number of challenges in the 1970s. A number of court cases that went all the way up to the Secretary of the Army, and it was established that the authority to dismiss someone from the academy is not in the hands of the Corps of Cadets, it is in the hands of the superintendent. And the superintendent alone has that authority to dismiss someone, because you're in the Army from day one at West Point, and the superintendent alone has that authority to do that. Unfortunately, recent data indicates that in cases where cadets are found by their peers guilty of lying, cheating, or stealing, or tolerating those who do, over 50% of those who are found guilty of that are not, in fact, thrown out.
Wow.
They're given a second chance or some kind of a there are a number of punishments they get. Sometimes they get sent back to the Army for a year or two, and then they get a chance to come back. Superintendent has a lot of discretion, and we're not arguing against the superintendent having discretion. We are concerned about the application of that discretion in the past 10 or 20 years.
Right. And I wanted to talk also, because I mentioned the cheating scandal of 1977, and we had the Borman Commission. For the listeners who are not aware of that, would you share about the Borman Commission?
Quickly.
Yeah.
In 1976, there was a large cheating scandal. There have been cheating scandals before that, too. There's a large cheating scandal over electrical engineering exam, a take-home thing. Several hundred cadets were implicated in it. It was a shock. It was a shock to the Army, and it was a shock to the nation that it was that big. President Ford ordered the commission and brought in retired colonel and astronaut Frank Borman. And he ran a blue ribbon commission, which investigated the cheating scandal at West Point. That commission, though, in its findings, said that there was something bigger than simply the cheating. There was a problem with the command culture at West Point. There was a problem with stress, the demands that were placed on cadets that were, in fact, becoming dysfunctional in terms of the cadet performance and the pressures between the culture within a company, the cadets being post-adolescents, young men and women,
right,
and the demands for their academic performance, and also the demands from sports and from the tax. So that commission's findings were more expansive than those than simply addressing the problem of the cheating scandal.
Right. So a Borman Commission 2.0, do you think is that something that's necessary now?
We do. Let me jump into that.
Yes.
Because
I'm curious.
First of all, let me give you one more data point on background.
Oh, yes.
In 2020, around the time of the George Foreman fall to roll, a number of recent West Point graduates, I can't remember if it was 19 or 20 of them, wrote a 40-page screed about an anti-racist West Point. It was a remarkable 40 pages. It was clearly insubordinate if you read the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And it also was remarkable because a number of these brand new lieutenants were Marshall scholars and Rhodes scholars, that sort of thing, and a Fulbright scholar. And it lacked scholarship.
Yes.
It was written in Marxism 101. It was written in, well, what wasn't in Marxism was in gibberish. They thought it was a scholarly piece decrying West Point and talking about the need to become an anti-racist West Point, which is a cultural Marxist talking point. And that was an eye-opener, a tremendous eye-opener, because where did they learn that?
Right.
Did they come with all those words and all those ideas when they were 17, 18, 19, when they or 20 when they came into West Point? Or did they learn that at West Point? And if they learned that at West Point, who taught them that?
Right.
Who was inculcating that?
Right.
And where are they taking that in the Army? Where are they serving today
right.
with those thoughts? So here's the need for a Borman 2.0. Because of that and other examples that we have, the fact that West Point, even though they say they don't teach CRT and DEI, you can get a minor in diversity studies at West Point. Uh-huh. And if you look at the courses that are required, it is, again, it's Cultural Marxism 101. So we know DEI and CRT is being taught. Furthermore, we know it's being inculcated in the same way you could argue, well, it's not being taught explicitly. Well, formerly, rational empiricism wasn't taught explicitly in every course, but it was used in every social science course and in every the natural science courses. Rational empiricism is how you do what's called the engineering method, the scientific method,
right.
is how you solve problems.
Right.
And cultural Marxism is applied. The whole idea of diversity, the idea of oppressors and oppressed, the ideas of race, all those divisions exist in these different courses. So we know what's there. The problem is, and we know there's a problem with the honor system. The problem is, it's like you have black mold in your house. And you start ripping away some drywall, and you have to keep digging and digging and digging to find out how much black mold there is, how much rot there is in your house.
Right.
And the fact is, we don't know. We don't know how deep it is, how wide it is, and how entrenched it is at West Point. We also don't know how much it is at the other service academies. So our proposal is that if a new, it's certainly not going to happen under this administration
right.
because they're proponents of it,
yes.
but should a new presidential administration be able to come in, our proposal is that a new president would sign an executive order, as Gerald Ford did, have the Secretary of Defense appoint a blue ribbon panel and conduct a nonpartisan, apolitical, in-depth inquiry into all three of the service academies. So we've called it a joint Borman 2.0. And I realize people don't know what Borman is, and they certainly don't know what Borman 2.0 is. But the idea is to have a in-depth look at what needs to be reformed, what needs to be restored, and what needs to be improved in every aspect of all three of the service academies. And that's what we're proposing. We have gone a step further in that we are working with the Heritage Foundation, excuse me, on its Project 2025, so that we are a pillar within Project 2025 that should a new president win the election in November and be inaugurated, that in the Office of the Secretary of Defense, they would propose to the transition team and to the president himself that a joint Borman Commission 2.0 be stood up. And we believe, and we have done some of the initial staff work for it, that such a commission, a blue ribbon panel, could be put together and in 300 days get to the root of the problem and make recommendations to the Secretary of the Defense and to the President of the United States on what reforms are needed, what things need to be restored at the academies, and what improvements are needed.
Wow. Just aside, have you heard, you have done this for West Point, is anyone that you know of in the other academies doing
yes,
this?
Yes, we're working hand in glove.
Oh, you are.
STARS okay. is an organization that represents all the services, but it's primarily Air Force Academy graduates, and the Calvert Task Group is the Naval Academy, and we are meeting with them weekly.
Oh,
we're working hand in glove with
excellent.
The other service academies.
Excellent.
Service Academy graduates.
Right, right. Paul, would you share any closing comments on this?
I want to really thank Jim about what he's doing on the Borman 2.0. He's the right man for it. We're so lucky to have a combat veteran like Bill Prince, who's the president of our new MacArthur Society. And they need to go to the MacArthurSociety.org, the website. Help us out. We need donations to pursue what our objectives are to bring West Point back to the fine traditions that it has been historic since 1802. We're proud to have an institution like West Point that is bound to and determined to create and make leaders.
Yes.
We can protect America.
Absolutely.
Protect our Constitution. Yeah. And we need solid leaders. We need those leaders with the skills that can lead men and women into combat and defeat our enemies. And Audrey, I want to thank you for taking the time today to have us on, because what we're saying is tremendously important to the future of America. Tremendously important. So we're going to continue to pursue it.
Yes.
Duty, honor, country. Is our motto. We do not lie, cheat, or steal. We deal with the truth, and we work that truth to get to the American people. So thank you.
Hey, well, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you all. And I would like to ask for the listeners, if you can give me any websites aside from the MacArthur Society is already taken care of, but if there are any websites where they can follow your work individually, please share. Bill? Bill,
yeah,
Jim? Yes.
Yeah. I would defer, everything should go to the MacArthur website, but
okay.
I've written over 1,000 pieces. I'm a writer. I've written over 1,000 pieces since 9/11. So there are two places you can find me on the web. I mean, look up my full name. I am carried every week at a website called AFNN by another West Pointer, a guy named, it's retired Colonel Mike Ford. And I also have a blog, which is Deo Vendici, where I put my stuff up on there too. So I have a personal blog. And I also have all my stuff on AFNN.
Okay. And Bill?
Audrey, I'd like to raise very quickly, because I know
yes.
we're short on time,
sure.
Another issue that has just come up. As I mentioned, I attended last week the West Point Board of Visitors meeting in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And this is composed of senators and congressmen appointed to this board, plus some civilian appointees. Interestingly enough, when the Biden administration took over, they fired all six, I think it was, of the appointees that Donald Trump had put into the position on the Board of Visitors.
Yes.
When Donald Trump took over, he did not fire the appointees from the Obama administration. But anyway, I think there were six of them fired, these were all six of them were extraordinarily capable additions to that board. But what I wanted to share with your listeners very, very quickly,
yes,
something that came out of the superintendent's briefing was his decision, apparently, his decision to eliminate Duty, honor, country from the official mission statement for the military academy.
Wow.
We are very concerned about that. This is just breaking literally almost as we speak. I was there at the meeting, and so we put that information out. And that's very concerning. Now, West Point has come back and said, well, duty, honor, country is still the motto. Well, mottos are mottos. I mean, you can have a motto that says you're peace and love.
Right.
But if your mission statement says you're going to close with and destroy the enemy, that's quite a bit more important than whatever your motto is.
Yes.
So the fact that the military academy has decided to take duty, honor, country out of the mission statement and replace it with what they call Army values, we find troubling. And even more so is the fact that the superintendent has said that they've been working on this for 18 months with stakeholders. But as of right before this, the the chat with you, Audrey, I have not found a single individual who had any knowledge of this, and this is supposed to have been going on for 18 months. So this is another concern of ours with a lack of transparency.
Yeah.
The Association of Graduates reaching out to presidents of West Point societies, and I'm a past president of a West Point society. Nobody heard about this, and yet the superintendent has specifically said, and I'm quoting here, thus, over the past year and a half, working with leaders from across West Point and external stakeholders, we reviewed our mission, vision, mission, and strategy to serve the purposes of West Point. Well, who are these stakeholders? And how involved have they been over the past 18 months? This is very concerning because it certainly indicates yet another example of lack of transparency.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And unfortunately, it looks like lack of integrity. So, and as always, I will have these links, all of them, in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the on-air button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the links and info that these gentlemen have just shared. This is critical. It couldn't be more. Thank you so much, Paul, Bill, and Jim, for sharing this critical work with us. Will you join us again on the show with updates? Yes?
Absolutely. Let's do it again, Audrey, and an update.
Thank you.
Excellent. Okay. And until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now. Thank you.